Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Steve Missler, Chief Politics Correspondent for Maine Public. In this segment, we're taking a deep historical look at the political origins of Troy Jackson, Democrats' new candidate for the U.S. Senate. The story traces Jackson's activism as a logger that began nearly 30 years ago in a dispute at the Canadian border, and illustrates how that beginning led him to become a fixture in Maine politics for more than two decades. We now turn to host Ari Snyder to introduce our story.
After a tumultuous month, Maine Democrats have a new nominee to take on Republican Senator Susan Collins in the fall. They're hoping that Troy Jackson can harness the populist energy of his predecessor, Graham Platner, who was forced to end his campaign under a cloud of scandal just after the primary. As Steve Missler reports, Jackson has long pushed for the rights of the working class, but his record will now face heightened scrutiny.
At a Labor Day rally in Portland last year, a crowd of 6,000 strong turned out to hear their new anti-establishment hero.
Because as goes Maine, as goes the nation. Thank you very much.
Graham Platner then left the stage to make way for a logger from Allegash, who was running for governor, but also leveraging his everyman image.
And they don't want somebody with grease on their hands and shit on their shoes. Someone who talks funny, didn't go to the right school, and doesn't share their pedigree. To them, that is what we are, nobodies. But we know better. We know they aren't coming to save us. They never have, and they never will.
Jackson ultimately placed third in the Democratic primary for governor. Platner vaulted to national prominence, emerging as the party nominee. And then, just a few weeks later, collapsed under the weight of scandal.
We believe that for the movement to continue, it can't be me.
Now, after winning a hastily arranged nominating convention, the party's hopes of unseating Republican Senator Susan Collins have fallen to Jackson. A lot is at stake, and the contest will be a test of whether he can channel the energy of a movement that Platner built and had sustained until just a few weeks ago. So who is Troy Jackson? His journey from the North Woods into politics began nearly 30 years ago at a protest at the Canadian border.
For the second day in a row, a group of American loggers parked their pickup trucks in the middle of the road near a remote border crossing in northwestern Aroostook County. The loggers are upset with the way Canadian logging companies are doing business in Maine.
Jackson was among a group of unemployed loggers who used their pickup trucks to blockade the St. Palmfield border crossing with Canada. They were protesting what they said were labor law violations by companies that hired Canadian loggers to cut American wood in the vast timber lots near Jackson's hometown of Allegash. Then, just 31 years old, Jackson joined the protesters, arguing that the American woodcutters were losing job opportunities or working for less.
It's gone down from what it was 10 years ago. I mean, I don't make near what I used to 10 years ago.
An Associated Press photo taken in 1998 shows him glaring at the Maine State Police troopers as they tried to persuade the loggers to open the road.
Troy was very emotional, and rightfully so.
Dana Duran, who was working for the State Labor Department at the time, was dispatched to the scene. He says landowners in Maine, mostly paper companies, had a financial incentive to hire Canadian loggers.
There was a real demand from those landowners to have a lot of people on the ground to cut wood and to move wood. And so, you know, they looked heavily upon Canadians to do that work.
Jackson's sense of injustice simmered. The population in Allegash had plummeted to about 250 people. The local school closed. By then, he was a young father and often forced to leave his family during the week to take jobs that were hours away. In a speech during a run for Congress in 2014, Jackson recalled how his son would hold tightly to his hand on Sunday nights because he didn't want his father to leave.
As if all the strength that he had in that little hand could counter generations of corporate greed that was keeping other young children in the St. John Valley from their parents. It was during those long Sunday nights that would turn into early Monday mornings that I stopped accepting things for the way that they were and started thinking about the way that they should be.
Jackson first ran for the legislature in 2000 as a Republican and lost. 2 years later, he ran as an independent and won. 2 years after that, he became a Democrat. And his positions on social issues have also changed since then. Early on, he earned top ratings from anti-abortion groups. In 2009, he opposed a bill legalizing same-sex marriage. He's tacked sharply left on those issues as he's climbed the political ladder, but his focus on economic populism remained steady, especially when it came to protections for Maine loggers. In 2009, he led two reporters on a ride-along as he scanned radio traffic for French voices and led incursions into logging job sites to inspect for Canadian workers. He fired back at landowners who had branded him a rabble-rouser.
You're either lazy and a troublemaker or you don't want to work. That's what they do. They try and discredit you.
Jackson has long claimed the working class as peers and invited confrontations with what he says are their enemies, corporations, business owners, even governors. In 2013, Republican Governor Paul LePage made headlines for using a crude sexual remark about Jackson during a budget standoff. He also insulted Jackson's intelligence.
People like Troy Jackson, they ought to go back in the woods and cut trees and let somebody with a brain come down here and do some work.
It played right into Jackson's 2014 convention speech. He likened LePage to the landowners he'd been fighting for more than a decade.
I wear that incel as a badge of courage because it means that I'm standing up for men and women that have been forgotten for too long and left behind for too long.
His rousing speech did little for his congressional primary bid. He lost to centrist Emily Kane by 40 points. The loss stung, and he began to gravitate toward independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, endorsing him over Hillary Clinton and working for his campaign during the bitter 2016 presidential election.
But ladies and gentlemen, I never believed I'd have the chance to vote for someone who speaks directly to me, my family, and our feelings and our fears.
Jackson returned to the legislature that same year, setting his sights on leadership. He was chosen as Senate president 2 years later when Governor Janet Mills was elected to her first term. He clashed frequently with Mills and butted heads with others too. Dana Duran, director of the Professional Logging Contractors of the Northeast, says Jackson and his group were sometimes at odds as the logging industry became more mechanized. There were blow-ups at the statehouse, but Duran says the relationship is okay now.
He may have developed perspectives when we were in opposition that he wasn't okay with, but I think that's evolved over time and he's matured.
And now, as he enters the Senate race, the national press has begun probing Jackson's dust-ups with lobbyists and fellow lawmakers, including a shouting match with legislator Charlotte Warren in 2021 over a criminal justice bill. Warren, who endorsed Jackson at the convention, called it a family fight.
Troy and I are bare-knuckle brawlers. We believe in what we believe in, and we're going to fight for it.
Warren says the U.S. Senate needs more brawlers like Jackson. And Jackson says he's not worried that any of his past political disputes will hobble his campaign.
People elected me, and I feel like I have a job to deliver. And sometimes that maybe got more passionate than it needed to be.
And right now, intensity is what Democrats need from Jackson. He has fewer than 100 days to assemble a campaign to take on incumbent Senator Susan Collins, who is backed by a well-funded Republican machine. And that concludes this episode of Maine's Political Pulse. A special thanks to Erwin Gratz for locating some of the archive tape used in this story, and to Scott McCallum for helping us convert that sound from its original cassette recording. And thank you for joining us. A reminder that you can subscribe to The Political Pulse wherever you get your podcasts. You can also sign up for the Pulse newsletter at mainepublic.org/pulse. I'm Steve Missler. We'll talk to you again soon.